Today on Rambling About Cars, 2021 is at an end. Can you believe it? It's been quite a year in the automotive world. We're going to revisit some of the big highlights, the big stories, talk about some of the big auto debuts, and we're going to do it in proper Rambling About Cars fashion with a little bit of rambling, a little bit of beverage, and a lot of fun. So, fantastic friends. It's a hell of a year, and it's podcast time. One more time for 2021. Woo! I'm Christopher Smith. And let's give a big round of applause for Chris Bruce.
Hey, everybody. So this will be kind of sort of our first two-parter episode. So this week we will be looking at the year previous, the past 52 mm-hmm. weeks. And next week we will be looking at the year coming up, kind of the things that we suspect are going to debut, that we know are going to debut, what kind of the trends that we think are going to go on are. So, yeah. But to get us started, there's something that isn't a vehicle debut, but has been in the news throughout the entire year that I think we need to talk about. And it started last year, but it's just the fact that it has gone on all year that it's really worth talking about. And that's the chip shortage.
Yes, it's the chip shortage. I was going to say, it's probably not the other thing that we're not going to mention on the podcast that's still hanging around. We're going to talk about the chip shortage. And oh, by the way, it's New Year's Eve, everybody, as you're listening to this, at least. It's a couple days away for us, but happy New Year's Eve. If you haven't, go to Motor One Podcast on YouTube, like, subscribe, smash all that info that you see there. And I hate to say it, Bruce, but we're probably not going to meet our subscriber challenge. We're still at 188. But hey, we were willing to do anything. So it's not over yet. There's still time. But let's talk about the chip shortage.
So yeah, the chip shortage certainly started last year, but it's just been an issue this entire year, just going throughout. So I looked, the first story we had about it this year was in March, and it's kind of funny. It talks about General Motors cutting production due mm-hmm. to the chip shortage, and for whatever reason, it has plagued General Motors the worst, it seems.
It does seem that way, doesn't it? Because we just had some stories.
American automakers, yeah. It just seems like GM has gotten nailed by this thing. And it's not just GM. I'll show some other examples in a second. But they seem to have taken the brunt of it for whatever reason.
And I mean, it's ongoing because we just had a story that I think went up yesterday about the Cadillac CT4, CT5 sedans not getting Super Cruise for 2022, at least of 2022.
So I was because of the chip shortage story, and I got an update about that. Here it goes. So you cannot get Super Cruise on a 2022 CT4 or CT5 right now. I got a statement from a spokesperson though saying that it will be available hopefully within Q1 of 2022. So there's going to be a short window where you can't get it, but it is going to come back, but it's certainly not available now.
Okay. Good. Good call on getting the update on that. Cause the initial report that I saw, one of our competitors, this is why Motor One, this is why we try to work really hard to get some feedback from our automaker reps, because the initial report that I saw was that's it. They're dropping it for 2022 altogether. Hopefully it'll be back for 2023. So this actually sounds a lot better.
So speaking of Cadillac, since we're mm-hmm. on that topic though, the other thing that happened is earlier this year, they also had to drop Super Cruise from the Escalade.
Yep.
If you're watching, you'll see that in just a second. Sorry.
They dropped Super Cruise from the Escalade. And I think that's similar situation to what you have with the CT4, CT5. They're hoping that it's going to be back here in the beginning of 2022. Of course, they also had, was it GM with the seat heaters in their Chevrolet? Yeah. With their Chevrolet vehicles. That sort of blew up into a little bit of a PR mess because they were like, yeah, it's just not going to be available. Too bad. So sad. So, okay. Now there's going to be a $60,000-$70,000 GMC Yukon SUV that you can't get heated seats on, but you can go to your $25,000 Kia and have it. And General Motors came back later on and said, we'll set this up so you can retrofit that. So But I mean, it all comes down to the chip shortage. And I see you also have the limited availability for park assist on Cadillacs. Yeah. Because again, of
Cadillac the chip had shortage. A rough year when it comes to the chip shortage. And this one is, it's not a full on not available. What they did was they only limited it to certain trims. So higher level models got it. Lower level models lost it, which kind of makes sense. If you're going to cut a feature and someone's paying a bunch of money for it, give it to the guy who's willing to pay the most. It's not necessarily great, but that's kind of capitalism for you. So they did that with the park assist feature. Yep. And just to show that it's not just Cadillac, I've got two good examples here. This is I'm pretty sure you wrote, and that is, and you wouldn't think chips, that's going to affect suspension, but Jeep Grand Cherokee L, they lost the quadrilift suspension system again because of the chip shortage.
And that's a pretty big deal. I mean, when you're talking about something like a Jeep with their off-road capability, that's a pretty key feature that a lot of people want. Cars these days, they're more technologically advanced than they've ever been. Chips, processors, there's such computer control. Yeah, even something as basic as adjusting your adjustable suspension affected by the chips.
Don't think this is just American automators.
Automakers,
sorry. McLaren had to delay the launch of the Artura because of the chips. So even supercar makers that are selling million-dollar vehicles, things are just as bad for them.
Well, Toyota, BMW, I know they've directly had supply chain issues and delays because of the chip shortage. I'm trying to flash back to earlier in the year here because, this has been something that's just recurred over and over and over again. Tesla.
But here, real quick, another example. The Alfa Romeo. Do you know if it's Tonale or Tonale? I haven't heard it said by a human being yet.
I thought it was Tonale, but
I thought it was Tonale. So,
but if you're a regular listener to Rambling About Cars, you know my pronunciation sucks. So, if I think it's Tonale, it's probably not.
Tonale. You call it tomato. I'll call it tomato. But
there you go.
They had to call the whole thing off because they decided not to launch it. It was all set to launch. And they pushed it back to the first quarter of 2022 because they didn't have the chips to build them, which is kind of wild in a way, because generally when you would see an automaker show off the product and then say, we're not going to debut it until XX date. But they just decided, no, we don't have the chips to build them. We'll wait until we actually can do it. So we're not going to see it until next year now, even though conceivably the vehicle is done. Just they don't have the chips to build them.
And what I was about to say about Tesla, not that they're suffering from the chip shortage, they've been mostly immune, and it's because they do a lot in-house. They've managed to find some workarounds on their own end, but, and Bruce, I don't have the story right in front of me. I do want to say there's been some recent activity at Tesla that's been causing some delays, because of the chip shortage. So, I mean, even Tesla that's gone mostly immune. That's mostly, not completely.
Right.
A big thing for me that I'm very, very interested in once we turn to 2022, obviously we're going to get vehicle sales reports from automakers starting next week, talking about year-end sales. Yep, for sure. Ford has been struggling with F-Series sales because of chip shortages, not being able to get the trucks out. Earlier this year, and maybe this is also, it wasn't a big story, I think, because it's like, there are certain circumstances going on. But I believe it was Ram, or maybe it was Chevrolet. One of them outsold the F-Series in a quarter because of the chip shortage. Ford wasn't able to move as many vehicles out. Whether or not that deficit is still holding, could you imagine, Bruce, if we come back in here January 3rd, January 4th, we're getting year-end sales statistics from automakers for 2021, and we find that F-Series isn't the best-selling truck?
That would be, or the best-selling vehicle, truck.
Right,
or
truck, right.
The best-selling. That would been be that way for 30 plus years.
That would be monumental. And I mean, you could say it's because of a technicality. They're not able to build the vehicles because of the chip shortage, but Do you think RAM or GM would care about that?
Oh, no. The advertising, like, they would just pump out, we have the best-selling vehicle on the market. We have the best-selling truck.
It would be brutal. It would be, like, dethroned after 40, it's like 35, 40 some years. It's been that way forever. You know, best-selling truck and then best-selling vehicle later on. And yeah, I mean, midway through 2021, for one period, F-Series wasn't the best-selling. They made it up on the follow-up reporting, but obviously we don't have fourth quarter statistics. Right. We don't have December statistics. We'll have all of that coming in the first week of January. And I'm really, really interested to see how that's all going to shake down.
Yep. So I popped this story up here. Obviously, you and I are not market analysts, but this is a story from September talking to a bunch of German automotive executives about what they expect regarding the chip shortage. And the general belief is sometime between mid-2020 and late 2022, or mid-2022, late 2022, is when things will finally get better. Maybe 2023. So we still have every bit of 6 months, maybe a year of this before things are going to get better.
Mm-hmm. And I just pulled up the story on the Ram, Silverado, and F-Series. And
share it for us.
And I had actually written that. I knew something seemed a little familiar, right? And I was right on all accounts. F-Series lost to Ram and Silverado in the second quarter of 2021. It wasn't a huge margin. And at that point, F-Series still had a year-to-date lead over Ram and Silverado. But yeah, the second quarter of 2021... F-Series was not the best-selling truck. It was beat by Ram and Silverado. And it wasn't, it was in the news cycle somewhat at the time, but I don't think it received the attention that it deserved, just because you're talking about a dynasty with the F-Series. Look at some of the comments. I remember some of the commenters were like, yeah, it's pointless. People can't buy. What is it available? Hey, it doesn't matter if there's a supply shortage. If it comes out at the end of 2021 that Ram and Silverado beat F-Series in sales, hey,
that would be
monumental. And they're dealing with shortages as well.
Yeah.
It's not like they're immune.
Right. So, we started this talking about how Chevrolet maybe had the worst of it. We showed the Jeep. Like, it's not like Stellantis and GM have all of these chips to use. Everyone's dealing with this. So, yeah.
And that was second quarter 2021. If I recall, I don't think we wrote an article on it, but I looked at the stats. In the third quarter, F-Series was ahead of Ram and Silverado in the quarter, and then still year to date at that point. But if the fourth quarter, man, if the fourth quarter was sketchy for Ford, we could be in for some big, big news next week.
Real quick, last thing regarding chip shortages and stuff like that. It's kind of a bummer for General Motors because they did actually have a huge update to Super Cruise this year.
I know, right?
So many vehicles haven't been able to take advantage of it. They added the ability that you could use Super Cruise while towing, which is a huge deal because we know the 2022 Silverado and 2022 Sierra are both going to have that tech, not to mention the Escalade. And it could also perform automatic lane changes. So those are big deals that GM was able to make, but so few people have been able to experience them because of the shortage.
Yeah. And I mean, Super Cruise obviously is the General Motors equivalent to Tesla Autopilot. Yep. And there really hasn't been much competition in that arena. Of course, Ford now is going to have their Blue Cruise that was also announced this year. Right. But yeah, what a tough time to be launching new tech and really trying to spread it out. And I mean, it's not really the fault of General Motors on this.
It's not the fault of any of these companies.
It is the way it is. It's the supply shortage.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and yeah, if it stretches on, we'll be talking. I know we'll be talking more about this next year. We'll be talking about this.
Oh, certainly.
I bet to some degree.
Go on the entire year. Hopefully, you know, by mid 2022, we'll be in a position where, you know, things are back to normal. Fingers crossed.
We'll see. We'll see. What's the worst that could happen?
Don't say that.
That's a lot of wood that I'm knocking on right now. So
yeah. Well, speaking of Ford, we have some good things to say about Ford. Mm-hmm. And that is, at least in my opinion, and you can tell me if you disagree, Ford had an awesome year in terms of vehicle launches. I'm lumping the Bronco into this. Technically, it debuted in 2020, but the first ones got into customer hands in 2021. So we'll count that. You have the debut of the F-150 Lightning. You had the debut and launch. You're just now starting to be able to get them of the Maverick. Like, and just came to my mind, the debut of the Global Ranger. So like in terms of Ford trucks and SUVs, all of those products, well, we haven't got to drive the Ranger yet, but otherwise, right, all of those products have been well received. They can barely keep up with Bronco production, like given the demand. They've done really well this year. I kind of have to say good on you, Ford.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up. I'm going to share the Lightning debut post that our colleague Brett Evans wrote up here. I ended up, and we'll talk about this in a little bit. I was trying to figure out just how many vehicle debuts we had this year. And I got up to something like 46 before I just kind of tossed in the towel and said, okay, well, I'm not going to consider like some of the really minor stuff where it's like, okay, here's a refresh on a model that has new headlights. I didn't count all that. So, I mean, it's really been a very, very active year for new vehicle debuts, all things considered. And I've wondered what's the most significant of the year. And I think the F-150 Lightning would win my vote as the single most significant new vehicle debut of 2021. Just because it's, I mean, I think it will be a game changer when it comes out, but it's also a big, big step from Ford taking the best-selling vehicle for 40-some years, and now they're electrifying it. And it's one of those things where it's like, why didn't this happen sooner? If you want to move people into electricity, why would you not want to offer that on the most popular vehicle you have? And it's almost like there's been an unspoken taboo where you don't touch the truck segment. You don't touch the truck people. The truck people want their V8s and their diesels, and we'll promote electricity, but it's like the truck segment, that's not where you go. And then Tesla says, here's our Cybertruck, which still isn't here yet. And then Rivian said, well, here's our pickup truck, which is here and won accolades from pretty much every single person I know.
Am I not mistaken? The Rivian, technically, they showed off the R1T first before. We saw the R1T before the Cybertruck. Am I right?
Oh, boy. We're talking like, what, a year and a half, 2 years ago? Bruce, well, I can't remember what I had for, remember what I had for breakfast this morning. But I think both of those were coming out at the same time, and there was discussion for a while. It's like, okay, I mean, Tesla is established, so Cybertruck's probably going to happen. This Rivian thing, is that going to happen? I remember some discussions there about whether or not that would actually come to fruition. And you know what?
I didn't trust Rivian up until literally months ago. I thought because there've just been so many like fly by night electric vehicle companies that, you know, you have to take everything with a grain of salt. But the fact that they've been able to put a vehicle in production and sell it, like, I'm a believer now, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, I think this is just a very, very big step in a market that probably should have had more attention focused on it a long time ago. I know technically you could say GMC trumped the Lightning with the Hummer, but
that's
a $115,000 luxury limited production thing. This is going to be an actual vehicle for everyday people for everyday use. Yes, it's going to be expensive on the higher end, but there's going to be the work truck that's at 40 grand. And you know what? You can buy an F-150, I think, for just under 30 still, a regular F-150, but most F-150 buyers, they're in the 50, 60 grand range. Yeah. So the fact that you can have an electric Lightning that's going to have all kinds of range, all kinds of power, all kinds of added functionality. And I know people are out there like, well, can you tow with it? You can't tow with it. You can't really go anywhere. No, the segment still needs to grow. But for contractors, for fleets where all they're doing is maybe 50 or 100 miles running locally, this is a huge game changer. You use the truck through the day, you go back to the office, wherever the fleet vehicles are stored, you plug it in, it's charged up, ready to go the next day. You don't have any maintenance for engine, for oil changes, coolant flushes, transmission services, all this. It's going to be a big game changer, and I think it's the most significant debut of 2021. And mind you, 2021 saw the return of the freaking Lamborghini Countach, so I think that's a big deal.
So it's funny that you mention the work truck angle on it, because I don't know what your Christmas is like, but there's a lot of car talk around my table at Christmas. It's just the way things are. But we got on the topic of the F-150 Lightning and it's what its advantages are, or what would make it attractive as a work truck. And one of the things that I brought up when I was talking to family is the fact that you are going to be able to use one to charge other electric vehicles. So say a company invests in a bunch of Lightnings, or they have a mix of Lightnings and electric Transits or something like that. And you have a vehicle at the work site and guy X has to go, you know, back to the shop to pick something up, and guy Y is just going home for the day. But there, you know, guy Y only has to go 5 or 10 miles and guy X has to go 40 or 50 miles. That means you can just plug in and charge the other vehicle without needing to stop to get gas, without needing anything like that. You just plug them in, you wait, you know, whatever it is, you know how long that's going to be. You transfer the charge from one vehicle to another and both people have no problem. Mm-hmm. And it's a really interesting, potentially useful idea in that realm.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think from a work aspect, from a fleet aspect, electricity in full-size trucks, it's ready to go right now. That's not saying, okay, if you're, we'll say, a rancher in South Dakota, which I know a little something about that. There are a few of them out here. You're a rancher in South Dakota and you need something that's pulling your horse trailer. And it might be 150 miles one way into the major town for supplies. No electricity. Yeah. It's not ready for you yet, but it will be. I bet. I'm going to say within 5 years, definitely within 10, it'll be ready. I think the charging infrastructure will be more robust. It'll be quicker. It'll be more convenient. Right now, yes, you can drive cross country. But if you are, say, in your Model S, I mean, you have to plan a very specific route, right, making sure you hit the superchargers along the way. If you want to deviate and say there's a nicer drive that runs, you know, a little bit further south, but there are no superchargers. Okay, well, now you're kind of tied to a very specific route. It's just not quite ready for prime time, but boy, I think it's close. And maybe that's a good segue, Bruce, to talk about just some of the electric debuts that have been going on this year all the vehicles we've seen.
Okay. What do you think? There's something else I want to talk about, but
okay.
I'm a good improver, so I'm going to say yes and we'll talk about EVs.
Okay, let's improv.
So I think one of the bigger pieces of news that has kind of come out in the latter half of the year is Toyota going all in on EVs. And so we covered this. We kind of dedicated a whole segment of an episode to it. Is their 15 Toyota and Lexus's 15 electric vehicle concepts. And concepts are one thing. Like, you know, I am still dubious that some of these vehicles are ever going to see production. We saw Lexus had 2 electric wagons. If Toyota if Lexus makes 1 electric wagon, I'll be shocked. And I don't think 2 are going to happen. That sports car, I'm kind of iffy on. I just don't know if they made it affordable. But, you know, the sports car market is so small and they're clearly investing so much that they're going to want to maximize on that investment. that I don't know about that. The Land Cruiser one, I think, will get made and looks cool as hell.
Yep.
But the other part of that is that there are three vehicles coming from them that we absolutely know that are coming because they're showing them off. We've seen interior, exterior, etc. And so that is your favorite name to say, the Toyota BZ4X, which we're looking at here. That's going on sale next year with a range of an estimated range of up to 250 miles and 215 horsepower from that. Also, the same vehicle, other than the nose, essentially, you'll get the Subaru Solterra, which will only be available with all-wheel drive. And it will be able to go 220 miles with that all-wheel drive system. Two vehicles look basically alike because they share a whole lot of parts. And then there is the Lexus RZ450E, which is doesn't actually look like the other two. You can see the footprint is very similar. If you look at the proportions, very similar proportions, but it doesn't look like it shares any body panels with the other ones, unless maybe I'm missing something. But, you know, these are all vehicles that are coming out next year. And Toyota just went pushed their chips onto the table, went all in, and they're making EVs.
Let me ask you a question. And I'm curious to hear this. Do you think Toyota planned all this time? We're just kind of we'll idle along here with fully electric vehicles, and then we'll just have this massive deluge of concepts and ideas come all at once. Or do you think Toyota kind of idled along and then went, holy crap, we kind of fell behind. We need to do something. Let's just get something out here in the next few months. I mean, part of me says the latter happened, that they just kind of looked around and realized, wow, Ford has an electric Mustang and we have nothing.
Right.
Right. And this is the company that had the Prius like decades ago. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I just kind of get that vibe from their 15 vehicle surprise announcement. Look at all that we have going on. And I'm curious to know what you think.
I agree with you. I tentatively agree with you. It feels like so much so quickly that I think there's a certain amount of smoke and mirrors. Like I was just saying, I don't think all of those vehicles are going to see production. I don't believe that every concept that we saw is going into production. You look at them and it doesn't seem reasonable or possible. On the other hand, and so there's a very good site called JapaneseNostalgicCar.com. Mm-hmm. And the guy there wrote up a story about it. And he said it was a classic case of Toyota waiting until prices had fallen enough and technology had advanced enough that essentially they didn't have, you know, because Toyota was not the first mover in this situation. They've dabbled in EVs, but this is the first true example of that they waited until the technology was there and then they finally put them out. I think that's a little bit of wishful thinking.
Yeah,
to a certain extent. I see the argument, but if you look at everything Toyota has said, and I should pull it, I won't pull it up, but about 2 weeks before this, Toyota, their advanced research division, put out a video saying why pure EVs were not the way forward. They basically said that plug-in hybrids and hybrids since they were cheaper to manufacture, they could manufacture more of them and you could get more electrified vehicles on the market rather than pure EVs. And I'll send it to you after this because it'll take me a second to find it, Smith. But it was this very like well-researched and intelligent argument. And then 2 weeks later, they show 15 EVs. So it just was kind of like one side of the company wasn't talking to the other. And
that never happens.
Yeah, and I get the impression that the real thing was that for a long time, they thought we can do hybrids and plug-in hybrids. Because if you look at Toyota and Lexus's lineup, there are tons of those. And they finally realized, hey, we are not doing this EV thing. We are not taking it seriously enough. hey, designers, you've got some sketches. We're going to make those vehicles out of clay and show them off. And that's going to be our EV initiative.
I'm glad you said that because, you know, with all of those 15, I'm wondering how many are just clay models, you know, the ones with the interiors were, well,
none of them had interiors.
You don't know if there are interiors in there because the windows are just solid black, right?
Right.
No, it's, you know, that's a very interesting take that Toyota was kind of just hedging their bets. We're waiting for technology to catch up. But at the same token, I mean, that's a risky argument too, if you're Toyota, because now you're basically saying, yeah, we're not the leaders, right?
Yeah.
We're not pioneering this technology. We're just going to let somebody else invent it. And then we'll jump in and create a bunch of stuff after somebody else has already done it. So, I mean, either argument, I don't think paints Toyota in a very good light, but
when you're one of the largest automakers in the world, you can kind of get away with that. Like, mm-hmm.
They have stepped up. We'll say that it took them to just about damn near the end of 2021 to do it, but yeah. They have stepped up with some electric offerings. But let me just run through a list of other electric vehicles, that we know about that debuted this year. I mean, Mercedes came out with what, the EQB, the EQE, the EQS,
yep,
the EQS AMG. Mercedes has just a whole lineup of electric vehicles now. What else we got here? Of course,
we got EQS Maybach as well, right? Or am I making that up? I swear we saw an EQS Maybach.
You could be, like I said, this list, I threw in the towel after 46. It's like, okay, if there's anything else, we'll just have to try to wing it here on air. Of course, the Rivian R1T that we already talked about.
I just had to look it up to confirm it's real. Yeah.
the Lucid Air, and once again, Lucid has long been one of those things where, okay, you know, Tesla's established. Is this Lucid thing really going to happen? And it did. And it kind of dropped everybody's jaw with its performance and range. South Korea, you've got the Kia, you got the EV6, the Ioniq 5. Of course, the Tesla Model S Plaid came out at the beginning of the year. It's a refresh of a car that's been around forever, but you can't not recognize it because it gets to 60 miles an hour, provided it has traction, in under 2 seconds. It's just an incredible showcase of what you can do with electric performance.
If you remember when Tom Malogny was on and had driven it, he basically said it's borderline unsafe.
Yeah.
If you handed the keys to a 16-year-old, it is unsafe. If you're a 40-year-old dentist, it's probably fine. But in the wrong hands, that car is too fast for the public.
It's unsafe to anybody who can't comprehend that you need to rethink everything you know about driving.
Yeah.
I don't care if you are an NHRA Top Fuel dragster driver. This is a street car. You have to recalibrate your brain before you put the foot down. You can't be looking just, you know, a little ways in front of the car. You have to be looking way down the street because you're going to be accelerating so fast, so quick that you need to be planning on things that are going to happen a quarter mile down the road. Not right in front of you. I mean, I'm with you there. Porsche Taycan Cross Turismo. Of course, we've talked about the BZ4X Stormtrooper name thingy. Turismo,
right? Cross Turismo's existed.
Is it the Sport? No, I thought it was the Cross Turismo that came out this year. And the Sport Turismo they could have. There's so many damn electric cars coming out. We were talking before the podcast about this. And that's when we decided maybe we should start the podcast because this is a really good conversation. EVs mainstream
definitely came out this year. I am looking at the story right now. It came out on November.
Okay.
Cross Turismo might have as well, but at least I'm not crazy. Sport Turismo.
Cross Turismo, Sport Turismo. Porsche is killing it with EVs. What else we got? We've got, of course, the F-150 Lightning that we talked about. We talked about the Mercedes stuff. I mean, the Mach-E is getting into the hands of people. And I mean, as we were talking about prior to this, Bruce, is 2021 the year you could consider EVs are mainstream, or is that going to be 2022?
So I'm going to use the same analogy I used when we were talking about this before the show. I feel like 2021 laid the track. 2022 is when the train's coming. that, you know, we saw all of these EVs. A lot of the vehicles you mentioned are either available in very small numbers or we know are going to actually be on sale in 2022. Mm-hmm. I think next year is when things get serious. I don't know if you remember this, but we were talking about talking to Clint about the Motor One Awards. He basically said, we aren't sure if we even need to have a dedicated EV category for next year, because there are so many in so many of the categories that it doesn't necessarily make yep. sense to split them out. And looking at kind of the calendar, that seems right. Like, you know, we've seen what's coming. We can see what's coming. I don't think it's quite this year, but I think next year is the year EVs are just mainstream.
I mean, it could be. I guess I'm on the fence. We've seen so many debuts happen this year. I think whether or not they actually are mainstream, I think it has people's minds shifted in that direction where it's commonplace now. Oh, you have an electric car. How neat. Well, now everybody can have an electric car and right. they're not even that expensive anymore.
Yeah.
And at the very least, the mindset has shifted where if they're not mainstream, it's not a big deal when you come across one. And of course, I mean, we know there's a bunch of stuff coming next year. I mean, we'll be talking about that in part two of the episode next week. Yeah. But I mean, the big thing I think right off the bat will be the Silverado EV that we know is coming. That's going to debut next month. I'm very, very interested to see what that's going to be like, because now you're talking about two of America's best-selling vehicles electrified.
Yeah.
And
you can kind of say three, because we know an electric Sierra is coming. So
right.
You know, although, you know, Silverado, Sierra have kind of always been
yep.
close siblings, but so it makes sense.
Well, with that EV tangent, Bruce, do you recall what you were going to say before I derailed us?
I do. Yeah. So you were talking about the F-150 Lightning as what you thought might have been the most important debut of the year. I want to talk about my most important debut of the year. It is mm-hmm. not an electric vehicle. It is a Ford. I think the Ford Maverick could be the most important vehicle debut of the year with parentheses, the Hyundai Santa Cruz in there as well. I think the return of the small truck market to the United States next year, once availability is actually there, I haven't seen either one of them on the road, but I was talking with my parents. My dad had seen a Santa Cruz on the road. I've seen a Maverick at a dealership. So they're just kind of trickling in now. Mm-hmm. Next year is when they'll actually be availability. I think those two vehicles are going to be huge. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think there is a demand for a small truck for a lot of people, especially if you live in kind of a, if you're a younger person maybe and live in a college town like I do, I expect to see a lot of these. Or if you live in kind of a suburban, urban environment where having an F-150 doesn't really make sense because you're not going to use that capability a lot, but having a Maverick with a hybrid powertrain does, I think these things are going to be killer.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're not really towing anything, right?
Yeah.
You're not really towing anything, which, sorry, but that includes quite a few full-size truck owners that might be listening. If you're not towing anything, having the larger vehicle with the bigger engine just doesn't make any sense. But with the Maverick, they've set it up where if you need to haul a 4x8 sheet of plywood, you can. It sticks out the back of the bed, but they've adjusted things to where you can actually haul it safely. And that's what you do with a full-size truck. So it has the cargo carrying capability. It has all-wheel drive capability if you're venturing off-road for a little bit. I think it has all of the capability that most full-size pickup owners need and use and want without suffering the penalty of the extra weight, the extra cost, the extra fuel cost, obviously. I don't know how many of the hybrid Mavericks are going to be sold.
They have said that those are not the primary model, but they're the less expensive model, which also makes sense. But, you know, it exists. The story we're looking at now that I pulled up, if you're watching on YouTube, is I wrote this story up, and it is a video from the folks at TFL Truck, and they took a Santa Cruz and they took it to a working ranch, and they threw a 900-pound bale of alfalfa in the back. And some commenters were joking that 900 pounds isn't that much, but for most folks, that's plenty. That's 900 pounds is a whole lot of things of mulch or dirt or whatever. Yeah. Or rocks, or, you know, assuming you could fit 900 pounds is plenty. If you've got a dirt bike or something like that, if you could fit it in there, mm-hmm. like that's plenty for most people, for most things. This is not meant to be a work truck like that. Neither Ford nor Hyundai pretend that, oh, this is the work vehicle for us. No, it is a vehicle for people who do have some stuff that they want to haul, who want a little truck, but who also want the driving dynamics of a small crossover. Mm-hmm. And from what we've seen, both do that very well. It basically comes down to which styling do you like better.
And, you know, that's where I think we're going to see more of the Maverick on the road than Hyundai. I dig the Santa Cruz. I think it has some pretty bold styling. The Maverick is a little conservative, but mm-hmm. I think for this step, back into small trucks, I think conservative is going to win the day. So you're I think we're going to see more Mavericks on the road. I think we would have seen more Mavericks on the road anyways, just because Ford already has sort of that establishment in the truck segment.
Yeah. Ford is synonymous with trucks. So it's not shocking that the Maverick would be the one we see more of.
And I'm trying to remember, I'm trying to see if I can pull it up here right now. Maverick demand is pretty good thus far, if I remember correctly. Do you remember seeing some reports on that?
Yeah, I wrote something up about a little bit ago, but basically it was on the Maverick Truck Forum, and people were essentially, oh, I remember what it was. There was a recall for it and a stop sale, and people were on the Maverick Truck Forum were complaining because it was going to take them even longer to get their truck, assuming it was in those production dates, because you know, there are people who have put down deposits, you know, started financing a truck, and they're just waiting for it to show up at the dealer, and mm-hmm. they can't wait to have it. So,
oh, that's what I was thinking of. This was back in August when I wrote this. It's talking about reservation, which doesn't translate to sales. Let me get a share up here. Ford Maverick hits 100,000 reservations, and that was in August. So that wasn't too terribly long after it debuted. And yes, reservations aren't sales. But if you follow what's been happening with Lightning, if you follow what's been happening with Bronco, Ford has had very good luck of converting most of its reservations for sales. Mm-hmm. So the fact that we're seeing this kind of response on the Maverick, Bruce, I think you make a very, very good point that I cannot tear down one tiny bit. Maverick with the return of the small truck, it could revitalize a segment that everybody thought was dead.
Yeah, I think if Maverick and Santa Cruz end up selling well next year, once, you know, like we said, availability is actually there, I would not be shocked that we don't see other automakers getting into this. Toyota obviously has a legacy in small trucks. Dodge has Ram has their little trucks that they sell in Mexico that, you know, as a stopgap measure could work. Nissan obviously has a history in mini trucks and small mm-hmm. trucks. Like, there are these brands out there that it's not that hard to believe that they could take one of their crossovers and put a little pickup bed on it and offer it without a whole lot of extra engineering being necessary. So, yeah, well, I think 2022 will be kind of the bellwether. We'll see whether it's popular. And if they turn out to be as popular as I think they'll be, 23, 24, 25 is when we'll see even more vehicles in that market.
Right. You know, these other automakers, they're watching Ford and Hyundai very, very closely. Definitely. Because it's one thing to get a really good initial reaction and even an initial slot of orders. If you can sustain that, though, I think that's more indicative of just whether or not there truly is a market here for a vehicle like that. And yeah, that's going to take a couple years to get sorted out. But mm-hmm. I mean, regular listeners know I'm not a huge truck fan, but I am into the Maverick and I'm into the Lightning too. Ford, it's definitely been Ford's year for trucks. Ram, Silverado, GMC, even with the GMC Hummer, sorry guys, you can't do it. Toyota with the new Tundra, Ford got you beat this year. So what else, what other big news items do we want to cover? I mean, there've been so many,
there are so many debuts. That I had in mind. These are much shorter ones. I think the new Nissan Z, I'm still on the fence about whether or not I like it, if I'm being honest, but I do think it's nice that Nissan finally has a relatively affordable sports car to replace the 370Z after, is it 11 or 12 years, something like that? Like
they let it wither on the vine. And to Nissan's credit, they could have let it wither on the vine and then die, and they didn't. And there's been some criticism in that, okay, it's really still a 370Z underneath, but they've revamped the body. Hey, you know what? The 370Z platform, I mean, it was always a fun to drive car. It's just the styling had become dated. The interior had become dated. The power wasn't quite up to snuff with some of its competitors. And now I love the new Z. I think that front grille is still just a little large. I know they're trying to go retro on that style with just having just the big square or rectangular opening. I think it might be a little large, but I haven't seen one in person yet. And I'm told that when you see it in person, it actually looks a lot better. So
yeah, if you're watching on YouTube, this image we're looking at now, I think it is its best angle. It's not quite three quarter. It's not quite full side on. You can still see a little bit of the grill, but you can really see that roof line. And it really does look kind of retro modern. I think it's an attractive vehicle, especially from some angles. It's just kind of a bummer that it seems to be a bit of a parts bin special, that, you know, it's got the platform from the existing 370Z. It's got an engine that's been in infinities. I wonder about that, but it from certain angles, it looks really good. But that's all I got to say about that. Do you have anything else, any other hot news from the last year you wanted to show us?
Well, I mean, I was just looking over the list here. 46 vehicles that I came up with. I mean, I ran down some of these, the Mercedes, the EQB, EQE, EQS, Porsche 911 GT3 came out this year, Mercedes C-Class, Mercedes S-Class, Outlander, BRZ, Hyundai Santa Cruz we talked about, Toyota Corolla Cross. Yeah, okay. I put that on the list. Technically, it came out, but, you know, do people really care? I guess some people do. I shouldn't say that. Subaru WRX. I remember we made a little fun of that with their faster shifting CVT that doesn't have any gears.
Porsche Cayenne. And if anyone goes on the site, our colleague Jeff Perez drove it and loved it. So
he did. He loved it. He actually said that he thought he preferred the CVT to the manual. Or did they not have CVTs available?
Are you joking, or
I can't remember that.
I can't remember either. I thought it was you were doing a really good CVT joke, but I can't remember exactly either. But I can't remember.
He drove it.
That part.
Whatever iteration he drove it, and he liked it. Yeah. I think it's a pretty cool looking Corolla.
And he's a previous WRX owner, so it's especially it's especially meaningful coming from him. Not that it's not coming from anybody, but it's always interesting where you talk to someone who has owned a previous generation of the vehicle and then is going to the new one. Because when you own a car, you start to kind of understand it. Like the one thing with a lot of press cars is that they only get to drive them for a week. And you can only kind of get into a car so much in that time period. So when you have someone who has had an extensive ownership experience, and I want to say, and this could be wrong, I want to say Jeff gave it to his mom after he was done with it. So I think it's still even in the family. Could be wrong there. But it's a car he's very familiar with. So the fact that he likes the new one, that means something.
I mean, there is another vehicle debut that we haven't talked about that we probably should, because it's significant not just in the world of supercars, but also significant in the world of Chevrolet. We can't really not mention the Corvette Z06.
Sure.
I mean, there was considerable hype around that vehicle. I mean, I don't think it's not changing the automotive landscape. But 670 horsepower in a double overhead cam, flat plane crank V8 that revs to 8,600 RPM. There's never been any Corvette like it ever. And when you talk about an icon such as the Corvette, we were talking a little bit, I guess you could say similar with the F-150, making the F-150 Lightning electric. It's a risky move because the F-Series, such an iconic vehicle in America with a very, very loyal following that expects a certain thing from their truck. And Corvette obviously also has a very, very special dedicated following that expects certain things from their Corvette. And a high revving V8 engine that sounds like it should be in a Ferrari generally isn't one of them. So it's a phenomenal performance vehicle, but I think you can also make an argument that it's a little bit risky. It's a little bit risky for Chevrolet. They've already shaken it up a little bit by making a Corvette with the engine behind the driver, a mid-engine Corvette. Now they're shaking it up a little further with this incredible engine, which whether or not you disagree about a Corvette not having a good old pushrod V8, there's nothing wrong with the LT series. But this engine is just insane. The most powerful naturally aspirated V8 ever offered in a production car. We still don't know how much it's going to cost. We still don't know things like track times. There's still more information to come out on the Z06. But I think you can't not at least give it a little bit of recognition as a significant vehicle that debuted in 2021.
I agree. I'll pop this report up. So one of the managers of the Corvette program was kind of teasing stuff, and it sounds like it's going to start right around 90 grand, which I think you and I know I came in. I thought it was going to be like 99,500.
Right.
So if it ends up at 90 grand, that feels like a steal.
I mean, it's still expensive, right?
Oh, well, hell yes,
it's expensive. But
it's more than I can afford.
But when you consider, I mean, what's going to compete with that car? You know, the
911 GT3 would be one, certainly.
911 GT3. Your offerings from Lamborghini, your offerings from Ferrari, McLaren, yeah. All of those are well over six figures. Yeah. And this Z06 with that engine comes in around 90 grand. And you're right. They've suggested that. Well, okay. If you look at the previous generation Corvette, the C7, you take the Stingray and the C7 Z06, you look at the price gap between those two, it's probably going to be about the same for the C8. So that's right, where we're getting
where that 90 grand number is coming, you know,
yep.
Which is still an impressive number. So
impressive number. Yeah, I can't wait to see more about that. Let's see what else we got. How about I don't mean to bring this up as a joke, but it might kind of come out that way. What about the Mazda MX-30? Because
what about the Mazda MX-30?
It's Mazda's first electric vehicle, right? Shouldn't we at least give a nod to that, even if its range is not great? I mean, I think it looks kind of neat. Our colleague Jeff Perez drove it, and he said
it was great to drive. It's just
it was great to drive. You can't really go anywhere.
Drive past a charging point, that's for sure. Well, you're gonna be well acquainted with all the charging points in town.
The fact that, and I don't have the report pulled up in front of me, so I'm going just from memory, but the fact that Mazda debuted the MX-30, and then they with the purchase of your MX-30 will also give you the option of occasionally borrowing one of our other Mazda vehicles that you can drive somewhere. I mean, I can't remember the details of it, but the takeaway was basically, here's the MX-30. We know the range isn't the greatest, so if you want to borrow one of our other cars from time to time, we'll let you borrow one. You know what?
Yeah.
What an interesting, novel approach for an automaker to make. And you know what? I kind of salute you, Mazda, on that. That was a very interesting thing that you did. I don't know that it's going to help MX-30 sales at all, but hey, we'll see what it's all about.
I, it's, the, Jeff says the MX-30 is great to drive, and I believe him because Mazda, you are a Mazda owner, are generally quite good to drive. But I can't see anything but this vehicle being a complete flop.
Yeah, it's, you know what? We'll see how it stands the test of time.
Yeah.
But with limited range, yeah, that's going to be a little worrisome. And how about the Cayman GT4 RS? We were raving about that. What a phenomenal,
I'd love to have one. I wish I could.
What a phenomenal performance car that's going to be. And of course, I mentioned the Lamborghini Countach. I'll do another shout out for the Lamborghini Countach just because I think it was an extraordinarily gutsy move for Lamborghini to do this. They've never resurrected a name in the past. Mm-hmm. And I know there have been people criticizing it. Well, it's just a warmed up Aventador with different body panels on it. And it's like, well, yeah, of course it is. The Aventador is a pretty decent platform. Do you think they were going to invest that much money to create something all completely new and different? But the fact that they incorporated so many different styling cues, they could have just done the obvious thing, right? They could have just done the obvious thing and added a big wing to the back and just edged it up a little bit more and said, hey, look, here's a Countach. But I feel like they legitimately tried to do the name justice.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they legitimately tried, keeping in mind that when the original Countach debuted in the early 70s, laws governing vehicle construction and what you can and can't do with a car are completely different now.
Yeah.
I think it's a good homage to the original. And
I still kind of wish it had pop-up headlights. I understand why it doesn't. I understand why. Still kind of wish it did.
I mean, on YouTube right now, we're looking at some photos. We're looking at the original prototype next to the new one. And I love how they have the gills there from the prototype even.
Yep.
A lot of Countach people don't even know about that. They know that their idea of Countach is, okay, the scissor doors, obviously, the massive wheels and tires, well, massively wide tires, I guess. The wheels themselves weren't that huge. The big bold fenders, the big wing on the back. I think it's pretty gutsy that Lamborghini didn't include the big wing on the back. I think they should have, though. I think that big wing on the back is such an iconic part of the Countach. Even though I know a lot of Countach purists prefer just the smoother lines without the wing. I think Lamborghini messed up a little bit by not including the wing on it, but bravo, another gutsy move. We've seen some gutsy moves from automakers in 2021, haven't we, Bruce?
I guess so. The Lamborghini was gutsy. So something that I'm kind of disappointed with, if I'm being honest, the new Mercedes-Benz SL. And I think it's because I bought into the hype early on. I'm going to try to pull a picture of it. And when we first started hearing about it, Mercedes was saying how they're going to make the new SL kind of a retro homage to the original 300 SL. And it's not. In fact, it kind of just looks like the current one to my eyes. And I know our colleague Brandon, he got to drive it recently, and again, he liked it. Like it's a hard car not to like, but I just don't like the styling. Like it, I was promised something vaguely retro, and I didn't get it. Is my big deal.
Now, I mean, I get the whole retro thing, and I guess I can see a little bit of that in there. And we're looking at it now on YouTube. If you want to jump over there and watch us, Motor One Podcast.
Well, here they put, oh no, I'm sorry. That's the wrong. There was an image where they had them side by side, but that's not the one I was thinking of, but I don't know.
I think it's a fantastic looking car. I love it from every angle. I don't care if it doesn't pull on my pure retro heartstrings. I'm happy with the way it is.
It just looks too much like anyway, but yeah, you were talking about good vehicles from the past year, and this is one that just doesn't do it for me. Which I guess is fine. I don't have to spend six figures on a Mercedes convertible. So I guess I saved myself some money.
No, that's fair. That's fair. Some other big debuts. I mean, anytime you have a new Jeep Grand Cherokee, of course, we have the Grand Cherokee L. The Grand Wagoneer came out early this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of those, why didn't this come out years ago? Things, right? Because you had, how long have we had the Cadillac Escalade out, proving that, you know what, people are willing to pay high five, low six figures for just a big, bold, cushy SUV with seven passenger capability. And you have the Lincoln Navigator that's kind of been sitting there in the background saying, yeah, we kind of know this too. And it's like, why didn't Jeep have their Grand Wagoneer years ago?
Yeah, I think there's a fair argument for that.
The new one is out. Do you think they're going to shoot themselves in the foot by offering the Grand Cherokee L?
No, I think it'll be a niche vehicle. I don't think, you know, it's going to be the volume leader, but I think there are a certain number of people that are going to kind of want that in between vehicle. And that's what the Grand Cherokee L does. Mm-hmm. Just my personal opinion. I don't think they shot them in their foot though, because I think there'll probably be enough people to buy them to justify the investment. I don't think it's going to be super common just because you have Grand Cherokee, Grand Cherokee L, Grand Wagoneer. If you wanted all the more stuff, if you wanted more stuff, more luxury, you're going to go Grand Wagoneer. If you just want a lot of that luxury, you're going to go Grand Cherokee. And if you want something in the middle, the L's there. So no, I don't think it's going to be the volume leader though, but just my opinion.
No, I think you're probably right there. That's about all I've got, folks. Bruce, is there anything else burning in your brain as far as vehicles, just automotive news in general? Literally at the very end of 2021 here. I feel like
the last one, and it's a vehicle that you and I have dumped on, but I do think it's nice in a certain way. And that is the return of the Acura Integra. It's nice to see that name come back. We've engaged with commenters about this, and a lot of them are a bit more positive on the Integra than I am. It's not, I need to see one in person. I need to maybe even drive one. I don't know, but it's cool to see that nameplate coming back and what that could mean. Like, you know, it's purely a nostalgia play for me. I'm exactly the right age to have nostalgia for the Integra name. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that is it going to be a good vehicle? I don't know, but is it nice to be able to say there's an Acura Integra on sale again? Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Well, you know, speaking of automakers being gutsy and making some gutsy decisions, we have the anti-gutsy decision with the Integra. Unless you consider, and yeah, I'm going to take my last few moments of 2021 to dump on this a little bit more. Unless you consider taking a storied nameplate like Integra and just plastering it literally in big letters on the side of a Honda Civic with an Acura with an Acura nose, with a rather generic Acura nose, I might add. That could be a pretty gutsy maneuver, I suppose.
Yeah, like I said, it's not a vehicle that I'm in love with. It's a vehicle that you and I have dumped on several times now.
One more time.
Hey, Integra's back. Maybe not in the best way, but we'll see.
Integra's back, and we should point out, this is a near production prototype. We haven't seen
haven't we seen a production? Am I crazy that we've seen the production model? No, I am crazy. You're right.
Acura has said this is like 90% of the production model. So it's going to have that nose. It's not going to say Integra in big letters on the side. Who's going to take that as an option? Like literally Integra going down the entire side of the car.
Porsche people do it all the time.
You're comparing Porsche to a Honda Civic.
You're right.
Not that there's anything wrong with a Honda Civic.
No, there's not. You're right. I'm just saying, hey, maybe I bet we'll, that'll maybe be we'll. A factory accessory. I bet at a dealer
it could be.
You will be able to buy that decal.
It could be. But this is going to come out next year in production form. Maybe something will change a little bit between now and then. And hey, once we see it in person and have a chance to drive it, maybe that'll change at least my mind as well. My mind is always open when it comes to vehicles, except the Pontiac Grand Am. Those just need to die.
Yeah.
All of them.
Those were everywhere. All of them. High school.
All of them on the road. Just step away. There's so many better things you can do with your life.
Are there still a lot in South Dakota? Around here, they've all kind of returned to the earth.
Oh, they're still around. They're still around.
I haven't seen one in ages around here.
They're like gremlins. You feed them after midnight, and it's just like all of a sudden they multiply, and they don't hurt you, but they're just annoying.
Fair enough. But yeah, I think that's our show. It's a little bit shorter than usual, but
just a little bit.
That's fine. We hope you're having a very good New Year's Eve. If you're listening to us on that Friday, or it's New Year's Day and you're nursing your hangover and you're having yourself some sauerkraut and sausage, or I don't know. That's what we always ate in my family, sauerkraut and sausage on New Year's Day. I know stinky foods in a lot of cultures. It's supposed to get the bad spirits out. My mother-in-law, she goes outside and bangs a pan. That's supposed to get the bad spirits away.
Cabbage and beans around here. So what does that mean? That means proper Coney dogs. I'm making chili on New Year's Eve. And then New Year's Day, we'll have some nice Coney dogs with chili, cheese, onion, and coleslaw to get the cabbage in there. Yes, you put coleslaw on a proper Coney dog. I'll die on that hill.
Fair enough. So yeah, so whatever stinky food you're eating, whether it's cabbage, sauerkraut, or you're outside banging pans, hopefully you're having a good day. As always, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. We appreciate all of our listeners. I know, so we look at the analytics. I know not a lot of people watched our Christmas Eve episode, but
it'll stay there.
Yeah, it's still there. Watch it. We had just as many listeners on the audio version as usual. So you folks still listen. It's just no one felt like watching, but you're with your families and maybe you don't want to show them our ugly mugs on Christmas Eve. And I can't blame you. We appreciate it. We will be back next week with a looking forward into the what we think the trends are, the vehicle debuts that we know are coming, that we think are coming. So it'll be a fun show.
It'll be a great show. It'll be our official anniversary show because rambling about cars started the first week of January 2021. So we hope you join us for that anniversary episode. We can't wait to see you.
All right. Talk to you later, everyone. Bye-bye.
Happy New Year.